For the Father, the Son, the Holy Ghost. Amen. We continue the discussion of life issues, and today I want to talk about issues that touch upon the period of gestation. And this is an important thing because of the fact that a lot of people don't really understand how the church, understands. The church has a very highly developed understanding of how all this is to function. And one of the things that we know is that from the time of conception, there is a unified action of augmentation. In other words, there's constant, from that point to the time in which the child is born, there is a constant process by which the child grows. And that even though the process changes a little bit, things are added, that type of thing, it's a unified action all the way to the end. And that tells us something that's quite important. What that tells us is that the soul is already present at the time of conception, because the same faculty that moves from the time of conception and moves the process all the way through to the time of the child doesn't change. And so there's a single faculty. Therefore, if the soul is present at the end, it has to be present at the beginning. And this tells us something, and that is that any time a single faculty of the soul is operative, the soul is present. This is quite important because death is defined as a separation of the body from the soul. And this is one of the reasons why there are fundamental difficulties with the criteria called brain death, because of the fact that the nutritive faculty is still functioning in these people. Even though the brain may have died, there's other faculties of the soul still present, which indicates the fact that the soul is present. Now, if we look at this in the context of the pill, for example, or certain forms of contraception, we know that they're abortifacients. So that even though, in fact, when the pill first came out, if I understand the history of it correctly, the pill flatlined the woman's hormonal output, basically, so that there was no change in the hormone. But they began to realize this is a problem. And so then they began to simulate the normal cycle that a woman has. Now, the problem is that in recent times, they've lowered the hormonal levels in order to cut back on other medical difficulties, but that meant that a lot of women were ovulating but not developing sufficiently enough for them to be able to carry the child, so the implantation wouldn't occur, and then it became an abortifacient. Now, that being the case, and this is something that, a lot of people who have been using the pill may end up having more children than they recognize. But this tells us that the pill is an abortifacient, even, putting aside all of the considerations, that in itself makes its use morally illicit. The other thing is that the pill actually makes men effeminate. In other words, real men take responsibility for their actions. They don't engage in something unless they're willing to pay the price of it for the proper effect that naturally flows from a particular action. And the fact that men can kind of engage in this and do this and pursue a life of pleasure without having any responsibility just makes them, into little kids, basically. And guess what? Now they've discovered there's a flip side to that on the women. They know that the pill causes a change in the chemical operations in the brain. So that in point in fact, women who are on the pill for any length of time find men attractive who aren't virile. In other words, it changes the chemical composition of the brain and they start pursuing men who are boyish, who aren't manly. And so this is something that I think is kind of an interesting side effect of the whole thing. Then, of course, there is abortion. Now, abortion, even if the status of the conceptus is not quite understood, it's still immoral. In fact, St. Thomas, who said that the animation, that is when the soul is actually placed in the body, occurred for 40 days for men and 80 for women, and another theologian said different times, that was all based on the science of the time, because they didn't understand how this whole thing developed. And that the reason they said 40 days is because the body of it didn't seem sufficiently developed to be recognizable as human. But now we know from the very time of conception that the conceptus is a distinct, genetically distinct human being from everyone else, right? Well, putting aside the church has said that we don't have absolute moral certitude, we don't have absolute certitude about the time of animation. But they said we do have some degree of certitude, and given that, the conceptus has to be given the same, accorded the same rights, the same respect, and the same treatment as every other human being. But putting aside that whole discussion, even for St. Thomas and the other moralists who said that animation occurred much later, they made it absolutely clear that it was against the natural law to have abortion. Why? Because we know that if you just look at the process, that from the time of natural union of the parents to the time of birth, it's all ordered towards the single process, right? That the union is ordered towards ultimately the woman giving birth to a child. And that unification of that meant, and that's part of the natural law, that if you interrupt that or intervene that contrary to nature, that in point in fact, it's morally sinful. So it's not just a matter of injustice against murdering a child, it's also against the natural law. This is why when the pro-aborts run around saying, well, you know, we don't think it's a child, it's just, you know, it doesn't matter. It's against the natural law. I mean, it does in the sense of that obviously a child's being killed. But the point is that we're dealing with something that they can't argue that because it's still against the natural law. And this means, of course, it's against the third category of natural inclination, abortion, or any kind of abortifacient, like the RU486 or the pill or any of that. It's against the third category of natural inclination because of the fact that it strips from the society members. It has a direct impact upon the common good. You cannot, through abortion, wipe out a city the size of Denver every year and it not have an impact on the culture. It's impossible. This is not something between a woman and her doctor. You're talking about something that directly affects the lives of every member in this society. But it's also, abortion is against the second category of natural inclination, to have children. Those things that are in common with other animals. You don't see animals going around aborting their kids, that type of thing. So it's also against a proper subordination to God, who is the author of life. So it's against the natural law. It's a usurpation of God's authority over life. It's injustice by killing. Then, of course, there is the problem of surrogacy. Now, this, of course, separates the unit from the procreative, obviously, because you have to have the child by in vitro, normally speaking, and then there's implantation in someone who's not the biological parents. Now, this, of course, means that we're creating, I mean, there's going to be massive confusion. I mean, think about this. It's now theoretically possible to have five parents. Five. The natural biological mother and father, the gestational mother, and the adoptive parents. That's insanity. That nature never intended that. But this means, of course, that surrogacy, nature intends that a woman gestate her own child. How do we know that? Because of the fact that there's nothing built in to the woman by which she can conceive the child and then gestation occurs in a different place or in a different thing. You know, I tell people, look, women aren't like a kangaroo. That's not what they are. You know, and they're not like cattle either. I mean, this is just something in which they're designed a specific way. And the church has come out recently and said that surrogacy is grave matter. And it doesn't matter that it's done for charitable reasons, because that's one of the things that's come out recently is you have people saying that, oh, well, we can adopt these embryos that are in stuck in cryogenics so that we can get them out and so that they can have life. And the church said, It's against the natural law, and you cannot violate the natural law for an act of charity. And this is something that's quite important. Then, of course, there's a taking a child by C-section without a sufficient reason. Now, if there's a sufficient reason, it's perfectly legitimate. But sometimes you'll hear about women who, you know, oh, I started having the labor pains, and I decided I didn't want to go through that, so I had it taken by C-section. It's immoral. There is a general principle. You do not cut You do not cut healthy organs. Now, obviously, we're not talking about the organs you have to cut in order to get to a diseased organ. But the fact of the matter is that the fact that women get hacked open, this is something that's, you know, kind of a serious procedure. And so the result being is that you shouldn't be having C-sections without a sufficient reason. It's contrary to nature if you're doing it without a sufficient reason. It's only tolerated because of the fact that it's necessary to save the child's life. Surrogacy also, let me back up just a bit. Surrogacy is also against the rights of the child to be born to married parents. In other words, the child has a right to be conceived, gestated, and raised by its own proper parents. We see this by the natural law. So this also brings up a particularly important point, because one of the phenomena you're seeing today is, and it's false even pastoral practice among some priests, they'll say, oh, if you've already committed the mistake of getting pregnant out of wedlock, don't commit another mistake and get married. Uh-uh. The child, the current Holy Father, has been saying said more than once, that a child has a right to be raised by both parents in the context of marriage. So what does this mean? Unless there's grave cause, if a child is conceived outside of wedlock, the father must marry the woman that is carrying his child unless there's grave cause. And there can be legitimate grave cause. In fact, there's quite a bit of it out there. But my point is that this is something which has become a bit of a problem today. Then there's embryonic stem cell research. And this is also immoral due to the fact that very often the children are killed in the process of this. Aside from the fact that the embryos have to be conceived by separating the unit procreator, so it's already immoral on that level. But the fact of the matter is that since we have to treat the conceptives as with all the rights of a human being, then it's immoral because of the fact that the embryos are dissected and parts are taken apart and that type of thing. It's analogous. Embryonic stem research is analogous to somebody coming and hacking off your limbs and taking various parts of your body in order to do research. Now, what this means is that any conceptus or any fetus or anything like that, any child within the womb, has to be treated with the same respect as any other human being. And this is quite important because it means that if the child dies, that is, if they're killed during the process of the research, then they have to be returned to the owner. Actually, they have to be returned to the owner to begin with. I'll talk about that in a minute. But this means they have to be returned to the owner. Who's the owner? God. How do you return them to the owner? Burial. You cannot continue to use the matter or the biological matter, which is sometimes called from this research in other things because of the fact that you have stolen something from somebody over you whom you did have no right. And this is in all its form, whether it's pure embryonic research or it's mixed. And by mixing, we mean mixing with adult stem cells. Now, you can have adult stem cell research. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But embryonic is another matter. It's contrary to good justice to God and to the person from whom these parts are taken, or for whom the experimentation is done on. Now, the experimentation is immoral, too, because of the fact that the experimentation always has to accompany the volition of the parents, of the patient. The only time parents can be given the permission to engage in an experimental form of medical procedure is when the child's, it's specifically ordered towards the child's health and there are no other means available. Now, this is quite important. This means that the child has certain rights, and this includes this experimentation on embryonic and fetal and unborn babies also includes genetic enhancing and genetic manipulation outside the intention of nature. In other words, it's one thing if they have a genetic defect and the only way this kid's going to die unless there's something done or something of that sort, that they try some type of genetic manipulation in utero, that would be considered acceptable for the sake of if it's necessary to restore the order of nature or for the basic natural physical well-being of the child. But it can't be done to enhance the genetics or do genetic selection because they don't want a girl, they want a boy, or that type of thing. That's all contrary. Nature intends that the human faculties are limited. That is, there's a certain limit, there's a certain parameter in which God intended our faculties to function within. To do enhancements so that, you know, that they get to, so that human be, you end up with a superhuman being is contrary to the intention of nature. It's against the natural law. Now, this also means, too, that any embryos that are conceived have a right to be carried by their mother. So even if the violation has already occurred, every embryo that sits in cryogenics has a right to be carried by the mother. Now, I don't know if most people would know what that means, but that means there's sometimes anywhere from 20 to 30 of these things that they've fertilized, and they're sitting in cryogenics waiting to be determined either by experimentation or to be used by the woman who's conceived them. That means she has an obligation to try and carry every single one of those to term. And this is something that most people aren't thinking about, the rights of the child. Then, of course, there's cloning, which is done, you know, at the time of the conception, right? And the cloning is contrary to the generative faculty. Obviously, the generative faculty intends that there's a proper union and that the product of that proper union is a child that's unique to itself, not some clone, right? It's completely contrary to nature. Society is founded on a variety of individuals and their individual perfections. Every individual has a different set of perfections, and God intends those, and He intends those to be used by the society for the betterment of the society. This is why super rigid class structure in a society is actually contrary to justice, because it may be a fact that someone is in by God with a certain perfection and it should be observed, and that means that he may end up being able to achieve a certain level in the society that he wouldn't unless there, if there was, you know, this rigid class structure type of thing. On the other hand, you get people today who think that, you know, I'm unique and more perfect than everybody else, therefore I am deserving of things that they're not worthy of course. But anyway, it's contrary to the rights of a child to be conceived because of the fact that he has, again, a right to be married, to be conceived within the context of marriage according to natural union. The other thing is, if cloning predominated, eventually it would lead to incest, since many of the people would have the same genetic code, you know, if it's the, you know, 1984 where everyone's conceived, you know, by cloning or something of that sort, you'd end up with that phenomenon. Conceiving a child in vitro is contrary, again, to the rights of the child to be conceived within the woman. And to keep embryos in stasis, either by cryogenics or otherwise, is also against the natural law. A woman, again, has an obligation to carry all these to term. With those that cannot, and where the mother is not able, since surrogacy is forbidden by the natural law, then there comes a problem of what do you do with them? Now, the Vatican put out a document recently which, on the whole, is quite good. It's very sound. But there's one thing it states, which is actually against the moral tradition. And this is what happens when you don't pay attention to the moral tradition, of course. The moral tradition, because it states in there that with these embryos that are sitting in stasis, that is, in cryogenics, you can't kill them, which is true, but at the same time, you can't, and if the woman can't bring them all to term, you're stuck with this thing of this person that can't, you can't do anything with it. That's the argument. That's actually not true. The moral tradition states that there is not a single moral situation that is capable of arising of which cannot be solved morally based upon moral principles. That's what the tradition always held. And this is why whenever a new moral situation came up, the moral theologians, in the tradition, not today, but in the tradition, what they would do is they would say, okay, let's sit down, look at the situation, boil it down to the principles, see which apply, and that'll help us solve the problem. They don't do that anymore, unfortunately. Some do, but not a lot of them. The fact of the matter is there is a set of moral principles. A child that's in cryogenics is basically an extraordinary means. You're using an extraordinary means to keep the thing alive until such time as that you can actually either experiment on it or do implantation. But since that's not possible, then it's like anyone else is in the state of extraordinary means. You simply retract the extraordinary means. That's not killing the child. That's just letting nature take its course. And then you baptize them if that's possible. And then that solves the moral situation, because by letting nature take its course, you're returning them back to God, and then you properly bury the remains. The point in all of this is that our society, the more we manipulate this stuff, the more dysfunctional and disordered it's becoming, and the more Frankensteinish it's becoming. It's just weird where this is all headed. I mean, now they're talking about having children that have more than one genetic, more than a father and a mother genetically. Like, they'll dice and cut up different genetic code and stitch it together and then go through the process that they've done with cloning. This is nightmarish. I mean, it's literally Frankenstein movie stuff. So the moral of the story is, if we just observe nature, A, life is a lot easier, but then we know that God will protect the culture, protect the society, protect our families, and protect us as human beings from anything that could result, any bad effect could result from it. In the name of the Father, the Son, the Holy Ghost.